Hey Earthlings, welcome back to Spaceship One, where we share stories of how to repair and fuel Earth for the long haul with health and justice for all. I'm your co-host, Anna, and today I have a special guest with me. Barnabas, would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure, Anna. Hey, everybody. My name is Sepase Barnabas Terso Gwaza, and I am an intern with Spaceship One. I am Nigerian and have my degree in environmental studies from the University of Regina, and I'm currently a geography teacher at the King's University. About 6 months ago, I discovered the Spaceship One internship opportunity on Climate Base, and then I joined the team where I contribute to social media and the blog.
I'm so happy to have you on the team, Barnabas, and to be sharing some of your work on our episode today. Earthlings, did any of you catch COP27? For those who don't know, it's the annual United Nations Climate Conference, and this year's was a mixed bag, per usual. Barnabas and I wrote a blog post about it together, which we'll be sharing today in audio form.
We wanted to discuss the main takeaways from the conference, especially in light of all the climate disasters we've had this year, which have only reinforced this urgent need for climate action and justice.
That's right. Let's get into it.
In 1963, Rachel Carson said, "I think we're as challenged as mankind has ever been challenged before, to prove our maturity and mastery, not of nature, but of ourselves."
That was nearly 60 years ago, and her words still ring eerily true to this day. The more that humans take over planet Earth and overconsume its natural resources, the more it becomes painfully clear that this short-sightedness may spell our young species' downfall. There is hope. As a species, humans are hardwired for creativity and collaboration. If we use those innate gifts to restore our relationship with nature and each other, we can ascend into a new age of shared prosperity for all.
One of our biggest obstacles, built by the greediest amongst us, is the climate crisis. Thanks to big oil, the concentration of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere has never been higher. And in 2022 alone, the world has seen dozens of extreme weather events that killed tens of thousands of people and cost hundreds of billions of dollars in damage. Many leaders have offered thoughts and prayers as a knee-jerk reaction to the tragedies. But as with mass shootings, these empty words do nothing to prevent it from happening again.
Empty words and empty promises can even be found in the very places that are meant to advance action on climate change. COP27, the United Nations Climate Conference, wrapped up on November 20th after going into nearly 2 days of overtime, partially due to the difficulty of negotiating a loss and damage fund for developing countries, who tend to be the most impacted by climate change while contributing the least emissions.
COP27 did conclude with an agreement for a loss and damage fund to be set up, but the details around who will pay and when the money will arrive are hazy at best. Many activists are worried whether this fund will be any different from past pledges, which have ultimately gotten very little money into the hands of the people who need it most.
After a year of deadly climate disasters, from Pakistan's mega floods to Europe's heat waves, how can we move beyond empty promises, beyond thoughts and prayers, towards meaningful action? What are some key takeaways from this year and the recent COP that we can bring with us into the future?
Takeaway number one, frontline voices first. While rich, powerful countries like the US are responsible for the lion's share of emissions, the climate havoc wreaked by those emissions is affecting people in poor countries the most, and they have the least ability to adapt. Resolving this injustice must be front and center in our response to climate change. Otherwise, we'll be leaving billions of vulnerable people behind.
Low-income countries in the global south, especially island nations, have been repeatedly asking wealthy nations in the global north for some form of climate reparations for decades now. The fact that at COP27 they finally got a commitment for a loss and damage fund, even if it's non-binding, is a small victory worth celebrating. It means that going forward, climate justice will now be an unavoidable priority at these sorts of intergovernmental climate talks, which have been long plagued by fossil fuel interests.
It's part of the reason this key first step took so long to achieve, and that countries could not come to a consensus at COP27 about the need to phase out all coal, oil, and gas energy extraction. The conference's final document retains the language from last year, encouraging efforts towards the phase down of unabated coal power and phase out of inefficient fossil fuel subsidies. Let's not forget, the failure to move away from fossil fuels sooner is the only reason something like a loss and damage fund is needed in the first place.
At COP27, at least 636 lobbyists from the fossil fuel industry were in attendance. That's more than the total number of delegates from the top 10 countries most impacted by climate change. It's also nearly five times the average number of delegates from African countries, which is particularly outrageous given that this year's COP was held in Egypt. Not to mention, most of the African continent is already suffering severe climate impacts, despite contributing just 4% of global emissions.
In Somalia, people are living on the front lines of climate change and barely surviving. Almost no rainfall for five consecutive seasons has decimated the crops and livestock. 1.5 million children are at risk of starvation by the end of this year. Famine is imminent. The need for climate reparations in Somalia and around the world cannot be direr.
But no more loans and debt, activists say. Climate vulnerable countries want grants and other direct funding from governments, nonprofits, and the private sector, even from the fossil fuel industry itself. Ultimately, these countries want polluters out, but not before they pay. The polluter pays principle is at the core of the loss and damage fund, which has the potential to deliver climate justice, as long as the most climate vulnerable have the most say.
Takeaway number two, tell the truth. When we are confronted with the reality of the climate crisis on the news and social media, all the suffering and loss can make us feel deeply sad, anxious, fearful, angry, and helpless, and many other difficult emotions. We have to acknowledge and hold space for that. But we also have to think critically and ask ourselves, how is the information being presented? Does it merely sensationalize the problem, or does it uplift the solutions?
Climate writer and podcaster Mary Heglar may have said it best. The thing about climate is that you can either be overwhelmed by the complexity of the problem or fall in love with the creativity of the solutions. And yes, you can do both at the same time. Climate change is as much a challenge as it is an opportunity. It's all about how you frame it. Telling the truth about climate change doesn't have to be immobilizing. In fact, when it's done with care, it can empower us into action.
That's the ethos behind organizations like the Climate Mobilization, whose founder published an in-depth self-help guide for reckoning with the climate emergency and transforming that pain into purpose. Their mission is to build a movement of people across the U.S. to initiate an emergency speed whole society climate mobilization in order to reverse global warming and restore a safe climate.
Another group that is grounded in the principle of climate truth is Fridays for Future. Its founder, Greta Thunberg, has been imploring the world's leaders to listen to the science for years now. Scientists are rarely trained in how to present their findings to a general audience, often making climate information inaccessible and not very actionable. Activists like Greta have helped bridge that gap by popularizing scientific climate truth through her speeches, testimonies, and social media, inspiring others to do the same.
Telling the truth about climate change means that the climate data and jargon must be translated into language that anyone can understand, engage with, and act upon. Just as importantly, it also needs to be literally translated into languages other than English, especially those spoken by people who live in the areas most affected by climate change, such as Swahili, Yoruba, and Somali. Climate Cardinals is an international youth-led nonprofit working to make the climate movement more accessible to those who don't speak English. They have over 9,000 volunteers who are translating and sourcing climate information into over 100 languages. The movement spans 41 countries and has reached over 500,000 people, with over 750,000 words of climate information translated to date.
Climate Cardinals founder Sophia Kiani is a young Iranian-American climate activist, and her speech at COP27 was as incisive as it was poignant. Addressing the country's delegates, she asked,
"What language do we need to translate the climate data into for you to take action? Because if you did have the information and you were only pretending to take action, that would be unforgivable. Or in the words of Secretary General Guterres, that would be lying."
Sophia went on to tell the leaders to stop lying in all six of the conference's official languages. Her courageous act of speaking truth to power is yet another example of how, when we frame climate change truthfully, we are more likely to drive action.
Takeaway number 3. Transboundary teamwork. In much of Africa, seasons cannot be defined by winter, spring, summer, and fall. Instead, there's a period of months in a year that sees near constant rainfall, called the wet season, followed by months of little to no rain, the dry season. And then the cycle repeats itself. But as the Earth's climate warms, the extra heat is evaporating the air's moisture more quickly, and that extra moisture gets released as extra rainfall or snowfall, which can lead to flooding.
That's exactly what happened in Nigeria, Niger, and Chad this June through October. The region experienced its worst floods in recent decades, with over 800 lives claimed and 1.5 million people displaced from their homes. Analysis by the World Weather Attribution Group found that climate change made these heavy rains and flooding 80 times more likely. But of course, climate change wasn't the only factor.
To understand this most recent episode of tragic flooding in and around Nigeria, it is important to know that one of Nigeria's major rivers, the Benue River, is shared with a neighboring country, Cameroon. In September, Cameroon opened its Lagdo Dam to ease the pressure of rising water from the Lagdo Lake. The overflow, combined with pre-existing water levels, caused the Benue River in Nigeria to rise, triggering a flood. This incident underscores another important reality about climate change. The Earth's climate is a global force of nature. It does not abide by our man-made borders. Bodies of water feed into and flow from each other, and the atmosphere is driven by wind across continents as the planet rotates. The natural systems of the world are connected, even if our political systems are not. So if we are to deal with climate change effectively, we will need effective transboundary cooperation.
One example of this cooperation can be seen in the Drina River Basin, which is shared by the Eastern European countries of Serbia, Montenegro, and Bosnia and Herzegovina. Due to climate change, the Drina River Basin is experiencing heightened water demand. And in May 2022, all three nations agreed to a transboundary resource management plan with respect to sustainability, energy, and climate goals. They're working together using legal and governmental co-management frameworks, environmental research and monitoring, information exchange, and multi-stakeholder dialogue.
On a map of the world's countries, we may seem separate and self-contained, but no one exists in a vacuum. We are all interdependent parts of a whole. Regardless of our differences in so-called national interest, climate change is a global problem requiring global cooperation beyond borders. That's why events like COP can be useful for state and non-state actors alike. At this year's COP27, a coalition of more than 600 investors overseeing assets worth almost $42 trillion committed to mobilizing funds in order to achieve climate targets of the Paris Agreement. A 45-country initiative called the Breakthrough Agenda committed to collaborating on 25 action points to decarbonize road transport, energy, agriculture, steel, and hydrogen by next year's COP. And 105 countries have now joined the Global Methane Pledge to reduce emissions of methane, a potent greenhouse gas, by 30% by 2030.
Whether or not the COP27 pledges will be fulfilled ultimately depends on us. Public pressure plays a critical role in changing institutions' practices and priorities. Who else will hold them accountable? It is up to us to make sure that they stop greenwashing, stop lying, and start abiding by the truth, which is that climate action means climate justice. Reading those sections about Nigeria, does anything come to mind for you on kind of the more personal level about how climate change is thought about in Nigeria and has been unfolding in Nigeria?
Absolutely. I think, like, for me as a Nigerian who has traveled abroad and lived away from Nigeria for such a long time, I feel like it's given me a very unique perspective about the differences between how climate change is perceived in Nigeria. And I think the biggest thing is it's unfortunately not given as much of a priority in Nigeria. For example, the elections, the presidential elections for Nigeria are coming up early next year. And unlike in the States, for example, climate change is barely a conversation, right? And I think it's because most people feel like climate change is just beyond their control, like this massive thing they have no power to do anything about. And also, you know, there are more immediate concerns to them, right? Just day-to-day feeding and... But like for me, as someone who is trained in environmental studies, I see those immediate problems and I see their direct connections with the climate crisis, right? And it's like one of the reasons why there's this much poverty is due to inequitable distribution of resources as we overexploit Earth's resources, directly causing climate change, more flood destruction and famines. And I'm from Benue State, which is... The literal kind of tag for the state is food basket of the nation. It's supposed to be like a farming state, but it's been turned almost into a famine state, right? Because so much crop yield has been damaged due to, we just spoke about the flooding of the Benue River, for example, and that happens all the time. You know, when I was young, it seemed like there was such an abundance and food was really cheap. The last time I was in my state, I could barely recognize it. Everywhere is just dry. And it almost feels like, I hate to say it, but it feels like death. Like you could just see the spirit of a place kind of drying out and dying out. And now currently I live in Lagos, and Lagos is on the coast. I live on Lagos Island, so it's surrounded by the Atlantic Ocean. And the flooding is incredible. So when we're talking about sea level rise, this is one of the places that's going to feel it the most, right? And while we are experiencing all these problems, we are famously rich in oil and exported out of Nigeria. And people still see that as, you know, a saving grace from the immediate poverty they see. So the conversation of tuning down of fossil fuel emissions is not where it needs to be in Nigeria. And most people have the very much valid criticism that, you know, fossil fuel has driven other economies to a place of wealth and abundance. And, you know, we want the same for us, so to speak, right? On the bright side, there's some more awareness, especially amongst young people, beginning to really identify difficult feelings and experiences they have had as climate anxiety and understand what that is and how to, you know, address that. You know, that's one of the things I enjoy about being in Nigeria right now, is just having the opportunity to be part of the conversation locally.
Absolutely. It's important to like make the connection, as you were saying, you know, a lot of the reasons why things are so bad don't seem to be related to the climate, but they're just exacerbated, which goes back to our point, our takeaway about telling the truth, you know, making climate change relevant to people in their lives.
You're right. We do have to make these connections. We do have to frame the truth. One of the things that I was most kind of moved by was the Climate Cardinals and their work in translating climate data to local languages. There are over 230 languages in Nigeria alone. And I mean, I teach geography in a Canadian university, and still students are like frazzled by all the information, you know, those IPCC reports. So you can imagine what that is like for someone who doesn't even speak English. It's definitely such important work to present that truth to people so that they can begin to make these connections and also find their place in the environmental cause that we have. You know, that's kind of what I'm hopeful for and what I would like to see more and more of. Oop, I just had a random blackout.
Where'd you go?
The power just went out.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, that happens a lot. The electric grid is like so horrible right now, so we get these frequent blackouts, but it usually comes right back. So like in a minute or so, it'll be right back.
Oh my gosh, why is that?
I feel like that's so complicated, and we can relate it back to climate change as well. But honestly, the infrastructure in the States is way more advanced in terms of the power grid than it is in Nigeria. And even in the States, it's not coping well with climate change, right? So you
No.
can imagine what it's like over here. That's it in a nutshell, I guess. But there's like so many reasons. It's just ever since I was a kid, it's not been great.
Well, there is the opportunity with climate action, right? Modernize the grid and decentralize it. If everybody had solar panels, it'd be so much simpler and wouldn't have these blackouts.
And what's great about that opportunity here is like because of our position on Earth's latitude, we get so much sunshine all year. So unlike North America or Europe, like we almost have near constant solar radiation, right? So solar would be great here. Unfortunately, like what most people do is use generators. The fossil fuel industry is so strong, you know, it's the same thing everywhere, you know, the lobbies and everything. So it's much more difficult to get solar up and running, even though like some progress has been made.
Yeah.
But this
Well,
has been so much fun. I had a blast, and thank you for inviting me to do this.
thank you, Barnabas. I appreciate you so much.